Welcome to another episode of At the Table with Patrick Lencioni, where everything we talk about is related to organizational health and the world of work. I'm Pat Lencioni, your host, joined by the full crew here. I've got Cody, Tracy, and Bo all together. How are you guys?
Wonderful.
Wonderful.
We're back.
Excellent. We also have Matt, our engineer, controlling the podcast from Hawaii, sitting out there in the backyard of the house he's in. Crazy. We can do this. Karen is here with me in studio. And Cody, what is the title of today's podcast?
The Activism Reset.
That's right. The Activism Reset. This is a title that and a topic that we were like, should we talk about this? And we thought, gee, it's what everybody else is talking about right now. And to shy away from it and not to enter the danger would not be true to who we are, because it's affecting the workplace and business and the culture. And so we're going to enter into this conversation around what's going on in society around businesses and especially those that are engaged in activism. But of course, we want to be very clear. We're not going to talk about issues. This is not a political show. There's plenty of those. We're here to talk about the workplace. But the context is this. There's surveys that have been done recently that show one said 78%, another said 87%, that most people of all stripes would prefer that the companies where they do business with don't get involved in politics or activism. They think they should just focus, if you make pants, to make good pants. And that seems to be what most people want. However, we've had a situation in which some companies that have gotten more aggressive in their activism have actually gotten punished in the marketplace. Well, that's interesting fodder for conversations on cultural and political shows. We are not about that. We're about organizations, and we want to talk about the challenges for leaders and employees that work at those organizations and how this affects the workplace, because that's what this is all about. So that's what we're going to do today. How does that sound, everybody?
Sounds great.
It sounds great. Yeah, we leaned into this topic a little bit a couple months ago in an episode called Dangerous DNA. And we were chatting about it again this morning and thinking about a lot of employees, managers who are out there trying to figure out how to navigate this tension.
Right. Yeah, it was at the end of February we talked about how companies' core values seem to be shifting and they weren't aware of that. We had no idea that less than 3 months later, this would be what everyone is talking about at the water cooler, on Zoom, on TV, and everywhere else.
You know, I love that this is how your brain works, Pat, because when things are going on in the real world or in the news, you have such a, and I say this in an endearing, not a bad way, but an obsession with how this impacts the workplace, like how it impacts leaders or the people that you have, you know, the people that are in your organization and how it affects their ability to have a dignified experience at work and go home and feel like a great human when they get home. So I love that when these come up that you're not going to the issue. You're saying like, boy, it's like you're trying to solve a puzzle for managers and leaders to say, how do we navigate this as this is happening in the workplace?
Right. And that's not to say that people don't have their own strong opinions about things, but that's not what we're doing here. That's not what we're doing here.
Yeah, so let's talk about that. What are some of the costs for an employee when the organization or the leader chooses to get involved in something political or some cause?
Yeah, well, I think what's important, Bo, I want to step back even from that and say, because this is a hard issue. I think the leader of a business, if it's a private company, and there's plenty of small private companies out there, has every right in the world to do with their business what they want in terms of, yeah, I feel strongly about something and I'm going to include that in the way we do business. That's the right of a person in a free society to do that. If you're in a private business, and especially a small one, but you need to be upfront with your employees about that so they can opt in or out and feel like, yeah, I belong here, or gosh, I don't, but I'm still loved and respected, but maybe I don't want to come to work every day someplace where I don't vibe with the or jive with the culture. That's one thing. But when it happens at a large public company, when there are shareholders involved, first of all, they are the owners and they're the people who you're supposed to protect their financial interests. And so when companies get hit really hard for doing that, there's legal and financial responsibilities there. But when you have when you have tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands of employees, and you take a stand on an issue, right or left, what doesn't matter what it is, you have to know that there are people in your organization that are not going to be aligned with that. Mm-hmm. And they're going to start asking the question, do I belong here? Am I wanted here? And I think that's the big thing. And the impact on the bottom line is very real, because people are either going to come to work and be less excited, or they're going to feel afraid. And the impact on the culture is going to be extraordinary. Mm-hmm. And there are companies right now that are dealing with this, and I can't imagine what it's like to be an employee there. I saw a statistic recently, Bo, that said 60% of employees feel like if they shared their true views at work, it would jeopardize their chances at promotion or even keeping their job. 60% of employees.
Wow.
And that's a real problem. I also saw a statistic that said like twice as many employees, like there was one particular thing I saw that said 14% of employees agreed with the company's stance around an issue. It doesn't matter what the issue was. But only 14% agreed with the activism that was being done. But a full 28%, when they were asked publicly, would say they did. So twice as many people would say they agreed with the company because they were afraid to, that actually agreed. So it's so often that there's a lot of employees in an organization who feel unheard or disrespected, but they don't feel comfortable about speaking up about it. And I think that's a long answer to your question, is we have people going to work and feeling like maybe they don't belong.
And maybe wondering if they don't belong. It's one thing if you know that you don't belong, and it's another thing to have thought that you did and now have a question lingering in your mind of, oh, am I welcome here? Am I invited to participate? Do people want me to be around and on this team?
And that right there is the purpose of this podcast and why this is so important, because a company can't be healthy if a decent percentage of their employees wonder if they belong. Mm. That's the whole point of a healthy organization, is to create a place where people feel connected and they feel like they belong there and they can interact with one another. And that's what we want to talk about here today. And that's a real challenge in a divided society, a divided world, when that creeps into our organizations.
And for a manager, imagine leading a team of 10 people and thinking, oh no, what if 60% of my people aren't sure that they belong here? What will happen is, you're never going to have a great team. You're never going to have the trust that leads to great conflict and commitments if people are left wondering, do I actually belong?
Yeah, because one of the best competitive advantages in business is culture. And a divided culture, you know, what does it say in the Bible? A divided house cannot stand. A divided culture is going to influence the way your customers interact with you, with the bottom line, the morale of the organization, how people go to home at night and treat their families. This is a serious problem in society. And while everybody's so focused on market share and stock price, and I get that, what's going on inside of these companies?
Yeah. And, you know, Pat, it's so interesting, because you think about when we lay out the six critical questions in the advantage, when the leadership team at the top of the organization has explicit clarity on things like, why do we exist as a company and how do we behave? That's the cultural filter for people who belong here. We've experienced this at our own company. It's like, it's already a pretty tight filter to find people that want to be and feel like they belong in your organization. And then when you're adding these ad hoc, you know, political or activist type filters as well, as a way of saying like, that's what our company cares about. It's narrowing that pool. It confuses it and it divides people that you already have based on the criteria you set at the behavioral level.
Yes. And we want to be clear. We're talking about an issue that you're an activist around that's beyond your core mission.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I mean, some organizations are set up to deal with these very issues. That's fine. Of course, that's what they do. But when you make pants for a living and you're doing you're an activist around things that have nothing to do with your business, that's what we're talking about here. And I think what's interesting is, I think if I were talking to a small business owner and they said, listen, I really do believe in this issue and I want to be an activist for this, I would say, then if you're going to do that, then love your employees enough to let them know that you're taking that on, and to let them know that as much as you care about them, they might feel disrespected to stay there, and that you're going to help them find a place to work where they feel like they belong. That is actually dignifying to a person. But to change your culture or to take on these issues and not be upfront with your employees means you're actually almost condemning them to come to work every day and feel like they don't belong. There's something like a kindness about being upfront about that. Does that make sense?
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah. Mm-hmm.
So can I ask the question, why are so many companies and leaders actually taking this position of activism? If all of this data is true, why are so many people jumping into that pool?
Well, I think there's a few different reasons, right? I mean, what do you guys think?
I have a wild notion, which is, I think that most leaders didn't come up with that idea on their own, but they felt some pressure to be able to say something or take a stand about something. And that's how this starts. External pressure, maybe it was internal pressure. Maybe it felt like it's what everybody else is doing.
Some of them, this might be their own personal pet project, right?
Mm.
But like you said, some of them, and we've talked to CEOs, they were like, well, I kind of thought this is what employees wanted me to do or something like that. And then, but then the question becomes, but if it's not the majority of employees, the vast majority of shareholders, employees, and customers that want this, then why would they do that?
Hmm.
I mean, like, do you think they knew what was coming?
I think it's a fascinating question, Pat, because like, if you're doing something, if you own the business, or if you're a leader of the business, the right thing to do is whatever you think is in the business best interest, right? So I would imagine that some of these conversations are happening like, it's sort of fun to think about, like, there's two steel companies, they make steel, that's what they do. And one of them says, I think we'd get more customers if we're a steel company that likes golf, you know, and somehow we're going to get more of the golfers to buy our steel. I think the notion of that is sort of ridiculous, but it has to be part of some of those conversations where they think if we are adding some values or some things outside of our core business, that somehow it's going to attract more people to them.
Right. So then do we think a lot of them just didn't realize that not everybody embraced the issues they were being activists around? I mean, were they just like, I had no idea that so many of our customers, so many of our employees don't actually buy into this?
Hmm.
Was it ignorance? Was it arrogance? Mm-hmm. Was it a lack of courage to say, hey, I don't think we can do that because it doesn't include everyone?
You know, Pat, I think you often tell a story about a large company with an intimidating leader or a team that didn't trust each other, where when it comes time to engage in conflict, no one's willing to be vulnerable, be wrong, say something that might disrupt somebody else. And what you say, and I love the way you end the story, is you say, this company got sold off for a fraction of what it was worth. It decimated a local economy. And the tabloids or the news will say, oh, they had an error in their system or their product, or they had a bug in the thing that they rolled out. When really it was actually the upstream, the real source of that was that they weren't willing to argue well about whether this was the right thing for their business. Or
fascinating.
So I wonder if it's that.
That's fascinating because then what it's saying, and this is probably true. I mean, we've been doing this for 26 years. There's a lack of trust at the executive level where nobody said, hey, wait a second. Maybe we shouldn't do this. And if nobody did that, now they're sitting there thinking, oh no, what are we going to do now? Which begs the next question. What advice would we give to a CEO of a public company or a big company with lots of employees who now finds themselves committed to something that they didn't realize, either out of arrogance, out of ignorance, or out of lack of courage and trust in the executive team? But let's just say they're out there and now they're like, okay, what are we going to do about this today? What are your thoughts?
I think that it has to go back to, hey, if you don't have behavioral alignment at the top of the organization where you can argue about real issues with absolute vulnerability and have conflict around things, I think like in some ways, there's invisible parameters around some of these things where you can't even debate them because it positions you as, you know, against other people. You know, so I remember a CEO, Pat, where we're trying to have unfiltered debate with their team. And he says, take out a pen and pencil. Here are things we're not talking about. And when you're setting parameters around the ways you're willing or the positions you're willing to take in a debate or in conflict, and things are off limits, I think people can make bad decisions. So you have to get to a place where people are willing to argue well and look for the right answer for the business and be unfiltered about that, right?
Yeah, I totally agree. But let's just say that's water under the bridge, and now you're actually on the other side of the bridge, and you're like, uh-oh, we have a divided workforce. Mm. And there's a lot of tension here. And now we suddenly realize if 50% of our customers aren't happy with what we're doing, probably there's 50% of our employees that aren't either. What do we do now?
I think if you're in the CEO seat, it's easy to say into a microphone on a podcast, but I would lead with vulnerability and come to the executive team and say, hey, I've done a little bit of internal reflection, and I think here's part of why I made this decision and part of why I didn't ask for the unfiltered debate. Pat, I know that one of those things for me, we've talked about this on the podcast before, might be fear of looking like a jerk. Not actually fear of being a jerk, fear of looking like one. And just being able to say, hey, here's what was going on in me. Now, let's solve this problem together as an executive team. You probably got into that mess because you didn't involve the people around you, and the people around you might be able to help you get out of it.
Yeah, and if you're the CEO, you have to have that humility to say, either I drove this and I shouldn't have, or I allowed it to happen because I didn't have the courage to stand up and say anything, or I just whiffed and didn't realize what was going to happen. My bad, our bad, what are we going to do now? So the first thing is acknowledging that maybe we were out over our skis.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And then what?
My next thought is, I love when you use the phrase around our core business. I think the best leaders and the best teams are saying, like, how do we focus on our core business, making our culture healthy and being successful in the marketplace and gaining more market share? The idea that you have to return to what is it that we're about as a company? What is our core business? Mm-hmm. And how are we successful in that, as opposed to how can we bolt on things that are political or activism related as a sort of ad hoc strategy for gaining more market share? It's not working.
Right. Right. So you got to go back to being practical about what the business is. What about employees? What do you say to employees who are in an organization and they're wondering, if they're like one of those 60% who says, if I speak up and say what I believe, that is going to hurt me. Or those ones that don't believe, but so far they've been saying, yeah, I agree with that, because they feel the pressure to do that. What do you say to them?
I love that the guy who wrote 14 books on this is asking the guys who've written zero books on this, but let me flip. There's far more people who are interested in you answering that question than me. What would you say to the employees?
I would say, I would probably have a very honest conversation with my manager, because it starts, people don't leave jobs as much as they leave managers oftentimes. And I would say, gosh, you know something? I realize that I've been feeling uncomfortable with this. And I know that it's difficult in an economic environment. It depends, but the job market is very hot. According to all the statistics, I might go and say, do you think it would be better if I left? Or do you think we're going to, I can feel like I belong here. And if that manager, the manager will probably be in the same situation too, or they should be able to relate to it, because if you're not the CEO, you work for other people too. I think having a very honest conversation about that. And I think if you can't have an honest conversation with your manager at your company about whether you're accepted there, I think I would probably start thinking about wanting to work someplace where I didn't feel rejected. Now, that's easier to say than to do, but there are so many companies, I don't think, that want their people to feel like that, that probably beginning the process of thinking about that might not be a bad idea.
It is such a tricky spot for a manager that they are, so many of them are being put in when a company is having some mission drift. And the wild optimist that I am, I think if a manager or leader is wanting to sort of turn the ship, Nature abhors a vacuum. People want to hear something. This is a great opportunity to be able to keep stating what your vision and mission is. And Pat, it makes me think about employee engagement, that it's a great time for the manager to be able to answer three questions for every employee. That is like, hey, I know you. That is, I see you. You're not anonymous. And here's what you do that contributes to that mission. And the thing that you can measure that shows that you're making a meaningful contribution to it. And probably many managers weren't doing that. And some other mission drift started to fill the gap of whether or not people felt like they belonged. But actually, belonging and contribution is relatively simple. Are you known, and are you contributing to something that matters?
Yeah, you're right. You know, Bo, something that just occurred to me is that, so if you're the CEO of a company and you say, hey, you know, I think we got out over our skis a little bit. I'm sorry. I think a lot of people felt left out. I think we alienated our employees. Forget about customers, shareholders, all that. I think we need to kind of bring it back and make a truly, you know, tolerant, inclusive environment, even for people who might disagree around these non-core business issues. There will be some backlash. I think that's the thing I would say to a leader. I'd say some people, it might be 14%, it might be 5%, are going to be upset that you're not pushing harder on that issue that's not about the business. Mm-hmm. And I think you'd have to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And I think the silent majority of employees who would prefer it, regardless of whether they actually agree with the activism issue or not, they would prefer an environment where everybody felt welcome. I think that probably 85 to 95% of employees would go, I want all of my coworkers to feel welcomed here. I think that there's going to be a few of those people who are going to actually come after you as a leader, and you're going to have to be prepared for that. Mm-hmm. And that's one of those places where if you have unity on your executive team, if the executive team knows that's going to happen and they can together say, we will support you. This is the right thing for our business, for our bottom line, for the unity, for the culture, for our biggest competitive advantage. We will take that with you. I think a CEO would have the courage to do that. But few CEOs I know are going to stand up and do that without anybody's support, because it takes humility and courage to be a great leader. And boy, it's nice to have people holding up your arms around you.
Yeah. Pat, I love that picture you're painting there, because you know, you say, hey, we got out over our skis, you lead with vulnerability. And you often say that, you know, similar to our bodies, that like when your muscle is torn, when it heals, it's actually stronger than it was before it was torn, you know, so that scar tissue heals more strongly than the tissue that's never been torn. So in some ways, it's actually, I think on the other side of that, if the CEO and his or her team are willing to have that level of unity that you described, have that level of vulnerability, it might even be better for the people in your business to go, hey, we had no idea that we alienated some of you. We'd made a mistake. We want to recommit to our core business. We want you to feel like you're here and you belong here. That would go miles and miles for the employees in that organization and create a stronger culture maybe than even before.
I love that you said that, because it's not like which 50% of our employees are we going to choose. 95% want an environment that's comfortable for everybody, and choose the 95% of reasonable people. And I think you're going to end up with a culture that's stronger and where people love each other more than they did before. Mm-hmm. I think that is really the message here. It's like, have the courage and the humility to say to your people, we're sorry if we made you feel alienated. We're going to recommit to being good at what we do and to create an environment where everybody's comfortable. And I think you will come out of this a better company than you were, even if it had never happened, strangely enough. All right. I think we can land the plane right there. Crazy times right now, but maybe we come out of it better for it. That's usually what happens. A little suffering, a little angst leads people to a better place. And that's what we're hoping for and praying for organizations, because jobs are important and they affect families. They affect people's self-esteem and everything else.
How about we end with an unpaid ad?
I like that idea, Bo.
So here's a very, very serious unpaid ad that I take very, very seriously. Okay. Which is, I'm gonna suggest an innovation in a home appliance that I think could be a game changer. Okay. And that is, one of my favorite things in the world is the add 30 seconds button on the microwave. Okay. And my suggestion to you, world, is that we only need one button on the microwave. And it is the add 30 seconds button. You're in on this plan, Tracy.
I'm in. It's the only button I ever use on my microwave.
I didn't even know there was such a button.
What's amazing is if you want to heat something for 2 minutes, you could push 200 start, or you could actually hit the 30 second button many more times than that. And it's better. It's easier. Actually,
it's
the same
way
amount
more
of times.
Efficient.
Same number of times.
Three the same minutes. Number of times. They get 3 minutes.
Oh, it's a flawless design. I want to say thank you to the person who invented it. And that's what our podcast is sponsored by today.
Okay, so our microwave in our house is those new kind that they put lower in the kitchen because we had our kitchen redone, which means I never bend over to look at the buttons. I barely remember what they are. And I don't see very well anymore, so I can barely read them. So I'm sure I have an add 30 second button that I've never even used. So you have just changed my life, Bo.
Yeah. Let me ask you a question. Does anybody else feel nervous about standing in front of the microwave still?
Yes.
Yeah.
All the time.
Absolutely.
100%. Can't do it.
Me too. And now it's at the crotch level. That's not good.
It's even worse.
Yeah. You know. Oh, so, yeah, that's a dangerous thing. So step away from them. Hit 30 seconds. Step away.
I can't wait.
Add 5 seconds. That would have been bad because you'd have had to stand there.
If somebody were to say, so Pat, do people ever stop you on airplanes and say, do you have any sponsors for your podcast? And you can say, oh yeah, you wouldn't believe it. We're sponsored by 80s music and the add 30 seconds button on your microwave.
But not celery. Still not celery. Okay, everybody, right. Thanks for joining us today. We appreciate you so much. We'll talk to you next time on At the Table. God bless.